Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to present here. It's not really data analysis. It's going to be slightly different from what the other presentations were or data collection. But I really couldn't fit this in any other session. So it ended up coming here to the computer applications in horticulture. So I'm going to talk about X-ray phase contrast imaging with horticultural crops. This work was developed with my advisor, Jason Londo, and Ken Finkelstein from the Cornell Synchrotron. So I'm just going to start talking to you about it, about why we ended up using this type of imaging. We're studying cold hardiness in grapes, and what we understand of the phenotype, what's happening during the cold period, during the winter, is that if you have a cell here, and in the darker shade of green is the extracellular space, as the temperature begins to drop below freezing, you get spontaneous ice nucleation in the extracellular space. That ice spreads around really quickly. Then that's a high temperature exotherm that you can detect. And then you dehydrate the intracellular tissues, and as the temperature continues to go down, you finally get ice forming in the intracellular space, which is called the low-temperature exotherm. So the way that we study this is mostly using a differential thermoanalysis. So we just put the buds on a TEM, a thermoelectric module, a bunch of thermocouples in a little plate, and we detect this voltage change when water freezes. And then here, the axis is inverted, and we can see the low-temperature exotherms there. But as humans, we're very visual creatures. And there was this guy who said in 1897 that the direct observation of the freezing cell is the best means of obtaining information on the causes of death by freezing. So at that time, they were already aware that we need to see things to actually understand what is going on. And this is also the case for the buds. And the thing is, the buds are not very transparent when you're looking at them. You can't see the ice forming. And the greatest problem with them is that once you damage the bud, if there's any damage to it, you don't see that phenotype anymore. You don't see that low-temperature exotherm. So if you try to open and do microscopy with it, your phenotype is gone. So you have to do something that is non-destructive. So that was the whole the drive for this project. So what we're used to in X-rays is X-ray absorption, which is different from what I'm going to present. So X-ray absorption is when you go in and you have a broken bone, they shoot you with X-rays, and some of them are going to stay in your body, and then what you see is the contrast. So some of those X-rays that went through here stay in there, mostly in your bones, because of the density variations in the tissues. And then you get the contrast where you can see the bones. The problem is that the density variations in the plant tissues are not very big. They're plants have mostly density of water because they're, 70 to 90% water most of the time. So we don't see these density variations. So X-ray absorption would not be a good way to look at this problem. So because of that, we end up using a different type of X-rays that you get from synchrotron sources. This is an image of what the Cornell high-energy synchrotron source looks like. It's a giant circle that has a lot of magnets around it, and then they shoot electrons, and they spin very quickly, and they hit on a material, and they generate X-rays. Those X-rays, because of the way they're generated, they're very parallel, and this is going to be very important, and I'll tell you why. And this area is around where I did this work. So it's very interesting as a plant scientist to be five stories below ground studying plants and working on something that looks like I'm going to launch a rocket. It's very interesting being there. Also, the people that work in there are mostly physicists, so they're a very different crowd altogether. But this is what the equipment really looks like. So you have that giant ring that here is small, and I'll talk about the details of this. It goes through a monochromator because you want to get rid of anything that is not very parallel, and then it gets through your sample here and it hits a detector. So this is how it works. So you get the X-rays, they hit a monochromator. Everything that is not parallel is going to be removed from your beam. This beam, in our case, it is about 7 millimeters in wide and 1 millimeter tall. So it also hits. We use a beam expander, so it's just a crystal, a silicon crystal that it hits so that the beam can be expanded. So those highly parallel X-rays are going to be expanded and hit the sample here, in our case, a bud. But anything that can be fit in a 7 by 7 millimeters window can be imaged using this technique. So then again, the X-rays that are very parallel, they hit the sample, and then the small density variations that you have in your sample are going to deviate those X-rays slightly, and then the interactions between the X-rays that are deviated are going to generate your contrast. So because here you have all of them hitting the sample very parallel, in here you can see that this part doesn't have X-rays hitting the detector anymore, and here you have two beams hitting the detector. So as you can imagine, having the detector here, the distance from the sample to the detector is very important, because if you have the detector too close to your sample, if you have the detector here, you're not going to see those variations because the beams are not going to have time to interact. And if you have it too far, you can still recover all the information, but it's not going to be in the same space as it is if you have in the right distance. So selecting a good distance from the sample to the detector is a very important step of this type of imaging. So in our case, we collect the buds, and to avoid dehydration in there, we cover them with Kapton. It's just a material that is very transparent to X-rays. And it goes on top of a thing called the goniometer, where you can adjust the angles just to put it in the right place. And then you hit it with the X-rays, and it gets to the detector. So this is the illustration. This is what it actually looks like in there. There's a lot of things hanging around that I don't know what they use this for. But anyway, this is the goniometer I was talking about, and there is the bud. And the X-rays are coming from here, and they hit this crystal right there, which is expanding, and it goes through the sample, and as it comes through the sample, it hits this detector here. In it, there's a crystal that transforms the X-rays into visible, and then there's a camera with a microscope of 5X that we use, a 5X lens. So this is what the image looks like initially. You can see that the bud. You can see that the bud is there, and you can see a little bit of the Kapton around it. And for grape buds, which is the case for this one, we actually have a compound bud. There's three different buds in there, and you can sort of see the three structures. So here's the largest one, the primary. And then here's a secondary, and there's a tertiary bud. So you can see something, but it's not very, just looking at this, it's not very useful for us. So we needed to do more. And that's where the 3D imaging came in. For 3D imaging, what you need to do is rotate your sample 180 degrees so you can get all the exposures. And in our case, we used one exposure every fourth or a third of a degree, and the exposure times were around six seconds. For us, because this is a dormant structure and it's slightly dehydrated, it's not a problem. I've seen some work trying to look at Arabidopsis, And a problem that they have, speed up the imaging, is because the plant actually starts growing in the period. With this, with 6 seconds, it took around 2 hours to image one bud. And you can imagine that, like, a little plantlet, if it dehydrates and the leaves are moving, it can be a problem. But anyway, the difference is, you still have the same type of imaging. The only difference is that you're rotating the sample as you're taking the image. Once you get all the exposures, all the 720 files that you're going to get, we use this program called Octopus. It is a very expensive program. We have access to it through the synchrotron, and with it, we do the reconstructions. So this is what it generates, slices, and this is the same bud that I showed previously, and now it's easier to see that you actually have, here is an image depiction of what it should look like, and this is the actual one. So you have the primary here, the secondary, and the tertiary, all in one single bud. And you can look at it from the side also after you've done the reconstruction. But we went further with this and started looking at it with Osirix. This is a program that is mainly used for CT scans in humans, and that's the case here. It's just a sample image of a CT scan. And then it really looks much better after that. You can actually look at different densities with colors. And this is a vinifera bud. This is the same bud that I've been showing you before. And what's very interesting looking at this is that we can actually see the flower primordia there. And again, the primary, secondary, and tertiary. This image was actually taken. The resolution in here is about 5 micrometers. What that means is that each one of the pixels is 5 micrometers in width and height. But we've been able to get images with less than 1 micrometer in resolution. So those are actually really good images. It takes a lot from the computer to work with those images, because once you actually get the slices, it's a stack of about 2,000 slices, and each one of them is about 3 gigabytes, so it's really computationally intensive. So this is just another view of the same bud, deeper within the bud, and there, what's interesting here is looking at, you can see the xylem that is developing underneath the primary, but it's not yet present on secondary and tertiary. Just as a contrast, this is what a Vitis amurensis bud looks like. You can see it's a lot more densely packed. The difference is that here in vinifera, what you have there is what we call a wool. So it's just a material that is there for a purpose that we don't really understand. In case of amurensis, it has very little of that material. All of it is green tissue, very tightly packed. It has a lot more water. When we do the DTA analysis, we can see the peaks are much larger because it has a lot more water freezing. This is a video that I don't think it's going to work. Yep, it's not. Just an interesting thing that we can do there is we can color the different densities differently, and we can select what colors they're going to have. And so in our case, when we're trying to study, look at ice versus water, those little differences are important. And this is a way that we can do it, just detecting where ice is within the bud. So in summary, imaging is possible in structures that are less than 7 by 7 millimeters. In our case, this is probably not very important to be here, but we use 15 kilovolts for the beam intensity, and the distance that we optimized was 16 centimeters from the sample to the detector. And as I said, 1 micrometer resolution is possible, but lower resolution images are much easier to handle. I just want to thank my committee and Ken Finkelstein and the funding. One thing that is interesting, it's the case for the Cornell synchrotron. I'm not sure about the other synchrotrons in the country, but it's funded through NSF and NIH, and you don't pay anything to use their resources, so you apply for beam time, and you just go there, use everything, and you don't pay anything for it. So it's something really good and that you should look out for if you have any imaging issues. So thank you for your attention, and I can answer any questions.